Friday, ladies and gentlemen. This is episode number 201. So we're now on a quest to get to 300 as we had our 200th episode. So now we're 201 of Shut Up and Grind with your host, yours truly, Robert B. Buster. So why do I love Fridays? Not because it's the end of the work week, because it's another podcast day, which means I'm going to meet with another fantastic guest. And between the two of us, we're going to help you overcome obstacles and get out of your own way so you can reach the success that you want to reach in life. So if you're brand new, if you're joining me over on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel. If you're joining the live feed on either of my Facebook pages, please like and share. And why do I look like I'm frozen? Am I frozen? Megan, can you hear me? Hey, okay, I think I'm back now. Okay, I'm having all kinds of tech issues today, so the green screen isn't working. I just froze up for a second, so I'm not sure what's happening, but we're going to smile and we're going to make the best of it. All right, so again, if you're brand new, you don't know who I am, let me introduce myself. I started doing workshops and doing groups where I'm getting up in front of others, like outside of the gym setting, and talking about resilience and perseverance and goal setting and vision and taking action. You should know what 1 hour of your time is worth. You should know the value that you bring to the marketplace. You know what your passion is. Starts with clarity of vision. If you don't have the clarity of vision, whatever next thing you get, you're not gonna see it through because you don't have the clarity of vision. So the point of my pain was being told you will never run or jump again. And all that stuff, I was like, you know what? Like, I wanna be able to take this even bigger.
You know why you do what you do. You have to know how to charge for what you do. That's how you're going to change your life, and that's how you're going to leave a legacy for your children and your family. You got to know your worth.
All right, so before I bring my guest on, you know we have to do the teachable moment of the day. And what I want to emphasize to you is to do something. I'm not going to get the live feed on here. Is do something that scares the hell out of you. Right? Do something that you've kind of wanted to do, but you've just been afraid to do it. And just do it. Like, it's really that simple. Just do it. Because what that's going to do, that's going to speed up your growth. So as a fitness coach, I do this every single day. So whether it's a farmer's carry, whether it's a rope climb, whether it's gymnastics rings, just no matter what it is, people tend to look at the obstacle and immediately defeat themselves. Like, oh, what is that? I can't do that. It's like, how do you know you can't do that? Just because right now you might be a little afraid of it, but just try it. You might try it and then realize it's not that bad. And then once you realize it's not that bad, you just opened up a whole new realm of things that you're capable of accomplishing. All right, so that's all I got for today's teachable moment. Just try something that you've never tried before, might be a little bit scary, and then you'll realize that you're already badass enough to get it done. All right, so that's my message for today. All right, so today we're going to be talking about thinking outside of the box. And we're going to cover a whole lot of other topics, but just when I went through her bio, that was the part that stood out to me. And hey, my sister's on. Hi, Monique. And so let me bring in Megan Doherty, and I hope I pronounced that right. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to have a conversation about life and just helping people just become the best version of themselves. So how are you doing today?
I am so well. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. And you're from Canada, huh?
I am, yep. Born and raised.
in the last 2 weeks, I think you're my third or fourth one from Canada.
So. I know, we just pop up all over the place.
All over, I'm telling you. And you said Quebec area?
Yeah, so I live in Gatineau, Quebec, which is just on the border with Ontario. So Ottawa, the capital. It's okay. Basically kind of one city, the region I live in. But I live on the Quebec side.
All right, so that's over here, like eastish side, right?
Exactly, yeah. Straight north from Vermont.
Gotcha. Okay. I love Vermont. Haven't been to Canada yet, but I love Vermont.
You've got to come in the summer. Come in the summer.
See, here's the thing. I will come in the summer, but I told myself I'm going to visit all 50 states before I leave the country.
Yeah, that's fair. So, that's a great goal.
See, and if 2020 didn't mess with us, I'd be so much closer. Because right now, I think I'm at 34 states. So 2020, I was supposed to hit Montana, mm-hmm. Idaho, Hawaii, Alaska. Like I was going to hit some of the bigger ones. And then Rona said,
I hear that. I mean, I usually travel to the States a couple times a year for conferences, yes, to visit friends, or my partner's family is there. Mm. We haven't been since 2019, so I'm just like, hi, America. Nice to see you from up here. Can't wait to visit again.
Nice. Are you originally from Canada?
Yep. I grew up in Ottawa is the town I grew in. Then I moved to Montreal, kind of the bigger city nearby, which 18-year-olds in Ottawa do. We moved to Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver. And I lived there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And about 5 years ago, I moved back to the Ottawa area to spend more time with my family, especially my grandmother, okay, which was, it's been really nice.
It's a noble reason. Very noble. What do you like about living there besides family?
Oh, it's a beautiful part of the country. My people are from New Brunswick, which I think is, you know, that's the most beautiful part of Canada, no question. So further east. But yeah, around here we've got Gatineau Hills. Ottawa's really lovely. There's lots of green space, lots of arts events, a surprisingly robust burlesque scene for a small city.
Okay.
But lots of investment in the arts, really nice people around here. And it's kind of interesting to live in a nation's capital. We get to be angry at our politicians in person. So
that's... versus like on Twitter here.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I could just go across the river. It's just like apartment buildings.
Twitter here, when people talk about politics, it's an absolute dumpster fire. It's like people, yep. I was like if people actually took their own goals as seriously as they take fighting for politics, there would be no poverty. None. I mean, because people like relationships end, friendships end. It's insane. Co-workers are at each other's necks. You know, like my brother is a diehard Democrat, and I'm an independent. But yep, because I disagree with some of the things he says, he lumps me in with the Republicans, and it's like, dude, it's like, you know, I'm entitled to my own thoughts. It's like, just because I think XYZ doesn't mean I'm for a particular party. You know, it's like none of them really care about us. They care about our votes.
Yeah, and it would be cool if there were more like independents, you know, or at least, you know, more than two kind of sides to the equation, because there's so many more ways than two of looking at things.
Exactly.
Two is not enough.
See, and that's relevant to thinking outside the box. You know, it's like, it's okay. It's like, there are some things that the right side says where I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But then, and there's other things that have me scratching my head. And it's the same thing on the left side. There's, okay, that makes sense. So, like, everyone should have health care. Everyone should. But then there's other things where it's like, I don't know about that one. You know, like, that's why I just stay right down the center. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but any which way. So let's talk about you. And let's get to know you a little bit better. So it's like, yay, me! All right, so how would your best friend describe you?
Oh, see, that's a good question. That's a really excellent way to ask that question, by the way, as someone who works in podcasting. Fantastic strategy. And I thought about it a little okay, because, you know, you make the excellent point. People will give you the resume if you just ask. Yes. Tell me about yourself. So I thought about my best friend, and she would probably describe me as, you know, a highly competent professional, really good strategic mind, really tech savvy. But deep down, not even that deep down, just under the surface, a giant nerd. Huge nerd, really into, yeah, the historical fiction, the spreadsheets, the data, the MCU. Let's say that.
Oh, yeah.
And even further beneath that, she's just a big old hippie. Vegetable growing, you know, food preserving, at one with nature. So that's probably, she would also say I'm pretty likely to, when angered, fly off the handle a little bit because I'm an Aries. Because my best friend is very into astrology. that's right. I think how a listener would describe me. I don't believe, you know, willing to help, good listener, nice. and you know, excited to get to do things, ultimately excited about the world.
So in astrology, do you know one of Aries' top matches?
I probably do somewhere in my brain, but not that I can recall to mind.
Would be a Leo. And bingo, wild guess who's a Leo.
Well, look at that. That's fantastic.
So we're going to have a great conversation because it's in the stars.
It's in the stars. And who can argue with the stars?
Exactly. That's awesome. I love how you call yourself a giant nerd. So let's break that down. What does that mean?
I think what that really means to me is that I'm not interested or invested in being perceived as cool or anything other than what I actually am. You know, so I love watching history documentaries.
Me too.
Yeah, sign me up for a weekend of that. Yes. You know, I'm not, I hair and makeup, never learned, can't do it. Not going to bother learning now, although I deeply respect people who are really good at their hair and makeup. That's like a super cool skill. But I think being a nerd just means like being super honest about what you're actually into and not trying to do things anymore that you don't like. I remember being, you know, in my early 20s and even a little older and, you know, pretending to like follow music and like be really into what this band's doing with the, I don't care. I'm not into it. So kind of letting go of those that need to be perceived a certain way, I think is the heart of nerdism.
Heart of nerdism. Exactly. And, you know, you said the word authentic and some people act like that's played out, but it's not. It's like being authentic is the best thing that you can be. And one thing that I've noticed, you know, growing up is very easy to fall into that. Well, everyone else is doing X, Y, Z, so I should. And then totally. Just as I've gotten older now, I'm like, I could care less what everyone else is doing. It's like, if I don't want to go, I'm not going to go. Yes. You know, like saying no has so much power. And people are like, oh, well, it's selfish. Like, yeah, it kind of is because I don't want to do that. You know, it's like I owe it to myself to be me. It's like, why am I going to go and put myself in an environment that I don't want to be in? Possibly with people I don't want to be around. I'll say possibly, you know, and like, how is that going to benefit me and my gifts and what I offer to the world? You know, so when you look at it that way, it makes sense.
I couldn't agree more. And I think the opposite of that is equally true. You know, giving yourself permission to say yes to the things that maybe, you know, don't look cool, aren't what other people in, say, your industry do, you know, having the bravery and the self-confidence to do that. It's like you say, it's been my favorite part of getting older, is just letting those kind of expectations, those need to please others kind of fade away and just be able to be like, yeah, no, I'm going to stay home and read, you know, trash fiction for the entire weekend and it's going to be great.
Yeah. See, my sister just put up a good quote my dad used to say, you know, if you're not leading, then you're not going.
Oh, I like that.
Yep, that's definitely how my father taught us, definitely. Because all of us, like I'm one of seven kids, and all of us are doing something in some type of leadership position. You know, it's like that's what our parents instilled in us, but mainly dad. Dad always hammered that fact home. It's like, you know, like that's kind of where Shut Up and Grind was born.
Yeah.
Like, long before I got into doing this stuff, just watching him work in his garage and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he'll hit a roadblock and he'll figure it out. He'll hit another roadblock, he'll figure it out. Like if he wanted something done, come hella high water, he was getting it done. And it's like, and we all grew up watching that.
Yeah.
And we all, it all got instilled into us. So like,
and how happy that must make your parents, you know, to see you all taking those important lessons and running with them in your lives. Like, I can only imagine that must feel so good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like with myself and my own kids, I'm still in waiting for it to fester stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's in there, you know, like there's pockets of it, but it's not fully there yet. So I'm almost there. But
you're almost there. I'm sure you'll get there. You had such a great example. You'll be able to do it, no problem.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So, what did you see yourself doing as a career when you were younger?
Running a restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah. So I started. I started working pretty early. I think I was like 13 or something when I got my first job. That was in retail, and I hated it. Hated retail. Then I got into food service, working at cafes, then becoming a server, and then managing front of house. Then I moved to the back of house. And did like line cooking, inventory management. I love working with food. I really, really do. But I think I heard you mention in another episode, you also have some experience in the
years.
Food world. 20 years, yeah. So you know it's brutal.
Yes.
It's brutal on the body. It's brutal on the mind. It's not super lucrative. So
You know, again, go ahead.
That's what I thought I was going to do. So I even, you know, I graduated high school and being at the age and demographic, there was no question about whether or not I'd go to university. That's just what you did. So I went to business school and then I got to know business students and I dropped out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I learned what it meant to be a business and I was like, nope, I am going to work in a bakery. I'm going to make pies for a living. So I did that for a little while.
Okay.
But then I got hired by an internet marketer who was also a school dropout. And he was like, you dropped out of business school. I can work with that.
No kidding. Wow.
And so I got into an early stage startup And that's how I started my career in marketing.
No kidding. It's like I dropped out of college 3 times myself. Like we have a lot of parallels here with the restaurant
industry. Yeah, it's really
industry. Cool. We can do an entire episode on just the restaurant industry. God, the stories. Whew.
Well, and I mean, it's so transferable. I learned so much about being a good manager and about running a business from, you know, being on the bottom of the food chain in a restaurant kitchen.
Yeah. You know what the restaurant does, though? Is it definitely teaches you how to multitask. It teaches you patience. It teaches you resilience. Mm-hmm. You know, I've said it in multiple episodes. I took what I learned in those 20 years and transferred those lessons into what I'm doing now.
Absolutely.
It's like, because you can say, yo, fitness is a completely different world. It's a completely different niche, but it still has moving parts. You're still working with people. You still have to motivate people. You know, it's like this, you're still doing customer service. You're still doing, you know, selling, and you're doing sales forecasting and profit and loss, and all the other, you know, everything is it's fully transferable. And so, like, when I'm working with people, I let them know, you know, don't think that you need 50 other things for you to shift gears. It's like you have enough already in your mental arsenal to where you can shift gears into doing something that can get you out of that grind. Because, like, I didn't dislike the restaurant industry. It was just brutal. Just the hours and people calling out and being called in on your day off and all that stuff. Like, I didn't want that anymore.
I hear you, and I couldn't agree more that, like, how transferable it is. Even just the ability to quickly evaluate a situation and prioritize what needs to be done next.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the ones I found the most valuable, is to be able to be like, okay, no, this is the order in which we need to do things to prevent catastrophe.
Yes. You know what one of the number one skills is, though, is when everything is going to absolute hell and you still have the ability to put the happy face on. It's like that person can do anything.
Absolutely.
Right? There's been plenty of times where people are in the back crying. There's cooks walking out, you know, like there's hosts walking out. Bartenders are flipping a lid, but then you got that one person that's just like, Rob, what can I do to help? With a big old smile. It's like that person right there is going to go far in life. If you can deal with all of that nonsense and still focus on the task at hand, upbeat and personable, it's like, you got it.
Yeah, I like it. No, it's because you can be super upset. You can cry if you need to. But you still have to wash those dishes and you still have to get that order out. Exactly. You don't get to not do that just because you're crying.
Exactly. Yep. It definitely shows you who you are. Yep. All right. So you get hired by the internet marketer. And so I want to know what this person's sales pitch was. It's like what first interests you about it?
Well, I was at the time working in a production bakery, which is, I'd say, in food service world, one of the best ones, you know, 9 to 5 hours. You just sit, you know, make scones and pies all day. Like, it's a really pleasant job. But, I was thinking, I think 20, 21 or 22, like pretty young at the time. I was thinking, do I want to be doing this for the rest of my life? No, I've got other skills. I like writing. Maybe I can get into, you know, desk type work and see how that goes for a little while. And so I applied I went to Craigslist, as you did, in 2010. And I just found an ad, looked, you know, marketer's assistant wanted. I said, okay, this looks interesting. And then I found myself in the most intense and ridiculous interview process I'd ever been in my life. So I had to do a writing sample. I had to answer questions. I had to take personality tests. I had to do other things. But by the end of the process, I was only continuing out of spite. Like, this person thinks you can take this much of my time. I'm getting this job.
Yeah. I love it.
Like, opportunity cost. I'd invested way too much to back up. And then I got the job, and that was really exciting. And I ended up being, you know, the assistant to someone starting a brand new marketing company. And then over the next 6 years, the amount of time I worked for him, I really got to grow up with the company. I became the director of a whole department as the company grew. And it was a phenomenal education. And I had learned so much about business, about managing a team, all these things. And then, here's the problem with, you know, hiring, training someone smart, mentoring them up, they're going to eventually develop different theories about how things should be done. And at a certain point, they're going to want to go a different direction. So that happened. And I moved out and worked on my own for a little while, did some freelancing, did a couple different things. And then a colleague from that same company reached out one day and said, hey, Megan, do you want to start a business together? And I said, with you, Audra? Absolutely. So we had a couple meetings, decided what to sell, and went to it. And we've been doing that ever since.
Nice. So like, let's go a little more in depth into that meeting. Go ahead.
Oh, into the let's start a business together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's more to that story.
Sure. Well, I think alcohol might have been involved because she and I hadn't even.
There it is.
Because she and I hadn't even spoken in a couple of years since I'd left the company. You know, she'd stayed up there a little longer than I had before, also moving on. And her background was in broadcast radio. And so she was a personality in the Dallas top 40 markets. I hope I'm saying that right. It's not my background, but deeply passionate about audio and storytelling. She'd done the podcast for the company we worked at and was working at another podcast network. And my background, you know, at that point was, digital marketing, business strategy, teaching people how to, start online businesses, market, that kind of thing. So we put it together. And it's like, okay, we can do B2B podcasts. And we got a couple, shook the network tree really, really hard. Got our first couple of clients, figured out how to, you know, make B2B or company podcasts workable for people. Actually, we're 100% referral grown. So we've never cracked the cold traffic nut yet. That's a goal for the next while. But really, it was a matter of what are we both good at? What's happening right now? Like, what can we do? What can we do to a really high standard was kind of the big one, is what can we do a good job at? And that's how we kind of got into this. And over time, you know, things have refined and evolved a little bit. But it's been really great to work together on it.
Yeah. It's like, I tell people who are looking to, whether it's supplement income or, I mean, yeah, you can drive Uber, you can do this, mm-hmm. you can do that. But I tell people, it's like, what's something that you can teach someone else?
Yeah.
You know, like just it's that easy. Like my mother's, she was doing yard sales for years. And she's 70 now. Mm-hmm. I said, why don't you create a manual on what you do? You know, it's like you've been doing these yard sales for like a decade. You know what I mean? So I was like, just create a manual. Tell people where you find goods, how do you price your goods, and you know, where do you go to set up your mm-hmm. your yard sales, or what's the other thing called? Flea markets.
Yeah.
You know, yard sales and flea markets. I said, just create a guide. I don't know, sell it for $10. You never know. You might sell 100,000 of them. You know, then you just made $1 million. I was like, think about that. I was like that. That's how easy it is to take it. Just something simple. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, it's already in your brain. Like if I wanted to create a manual teaching youth the basics of basketball. Which, God, I should probably do that. You know? but it's like, I can do that. Basketball, track and field, because I played almost every sport out there. But yeah. It's like, can you teach people to draw? Can you teach them art? Can you teach people to sing? Like, whatever skill you yeah. have, and it doesn't have to be anything earth-shattering, because there's someone out there that doesn't know how to do what you know how to do.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And I think we really kind of came to... starting a business backwards. It wasn't, we need to do this thing. It was, we want to work together. How are we going to make it work? which is, I think, a lovely way to get into something. But, you know, but it meant a lot of missteps in the first couple of years. It meant offering services we ultimately didn't like providing.
Yes.
Although I do love being in providing services rather than in just coaching and strict education.
Yeah.
We're looking at in the next year or two, getting more into, you know, membership community, on-demand curriculum kind of thing. But that had been, you know, where most of my experience had been before. And information selling is an awful market. Like it can be really powerful. It can be a real force for good, but there's a lot of awful people doing bad things. And being a part of that doesn't always feel great. Even if, you know, you are as an individual acting ethically, being part of that market, it gives me a little feeling sometimes. But yeah, what market isn't going to have that?
Yeah, but those are the people that are chasing money. And they just put together some nonsense and charge for it. And then, like I said, the other people, they don't know any better, so they buy it.
Yeah.
Like, I've done that myself.
Yep.
On the buying end. Yeah, I bought some stuff. Like, I just paid $50 for that.
I mean, you're lucky if you got out with only $50.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's others I've spent more, but
same.
Just for that example. But yeah, like, I it's almost like they Googled something and just... copied it into a document, made it look pretty, and sold it.
Yeah, or you have, you know, they're practically MLM schemes, is, you know, learn how to make money online by teaching people how to make money online. Here's the template that I bought from someone else that you can now sell to someone else.
Yes, exactly. see, and people have to understand the difference between that, what you just described, and actual network marketing. You know, because people think that they're the same, and they're definitely not. It's like, network marketing is you do something that's tangible, an actual service or a product, mm-hmm. and you show someone else how to duplicate what you did. Like that's mm-hmm. completely, that's like building a Walmart and then building another Walmart and then building another Walmart. Just the only difference is the person building the Walmart makes all the money and he gives everyone else pennies. Whereas in network marketing, you can actually outgrow the person who referred you. Mm-hmm. So that's just different. I just wanted to clarify that because I hear that all the time. Oh, network marketing, that's a scam. Like it's really not. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to clarify that.
Fair enough.
All right, so you and your friend are talking. You're going to work together. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, just take me through what happened next.
Let's see. Well, we came up. Audra Casino is my business partner. And she was sure it was going to be video. Video is going to be the thing that we do. She's very skilled. She has a great eye, design, good narrative storytelling, all those things. We're okay. We'll come up with a company. We'll call it the Video Doctors. That's a great idea. We can work with always B2B. My interest has always kind of been B2B more than B2C these days. Yeah. And it kind of sucked. I didn't have a lot to contribute to it. So I was having a really hard time trying to sell it because I didn't understand it on an intuitive level. And it just, it didn't work out that well. We did have a couple of clients, interesting work, and we made some cool stuff, but it was not scalable. It didn't have a way we could contribute equally to it. And that, I think, is really important in a, especially a business partnership, making sure you each are feeling like you are able to contribute in a meaningful way to what's going on. So we switched tacks a little, and actually we didn't come up with podcasting ourselves. It was another colleague from that same company, which is like the source of 90% of my valuable professional network. It's people who work for that company. Yeah. She reached out to us and she said, I've got a client and he has been trying to launch a podcast and the company he hired totally let him down. Can you guys rescue his podcast? And we're like, okay. Sure. Why don't, like, we are a very early stage startup. We need money very badly. We will do, anything reasonable for it. So we got into the podcast and we're like, oh, this is fun. This is fun. And this works really well. And this can be repurposed in different ways. Okay. Then we did it. We really enjoyed it. And then he told a friend about us and that friend also hired us. And then we started to grow that way. And we kind of really narrowed down, okay, this is the thing we can do. We can really specialize on these, business podcasts or podcasts that are for businesses. Mm-hmm. And of course there have been more refinements and changes and different ways of doing things over the years. Yeah. But, and even for a while, we separated for a little while because a small company can be hard to support two founders. But in the last year, we've gotten back together and opened up a sister brand to One Stone Creative to do kind of more high-end, more narrative NPR style editing. And so it's been a great journey and nice. Getting to work with people all over the world and mostly in the States for clients. It's just really gratifying work to it's the consistency I think I really like. We don't miss release dates. that's ironclad rule is we don't miss release dates. And so getting to hit that mark every week for every client, it feels good. It's like a little tick box every single time.
Okay. So you're creating podcasts for these businesses?
Yeah. So we occasionally do like a takeover. If someone's already producing and they want to just hand production, which would mean the audio editing, okay. and writing the show notes, creating the promotional materials. So we can take over. We can also help design a podcast to fill a particular role within a business. Let's say someone wants to really level up their networking in an efficient way. So it's okay. Podcasts will absolutely help with that. So we're going to design a show that's going to be appealing to the type of person that you want to network with. So you can invite them on that. That this content can be repurposed into your sales cycle really well. So thinking from the outset, how is this going to be used holistically within the business rather than it's just a podcast, it's a thing on Jenny's desk and she's going to, run with it. And because we have to have a podcast, but really like integrating it into the business, how can this be valuable in different ways? Because business podcasting is different than podcasting for passion or even podcasting as a business in and of itself. Yeah. You have to meet KPIs. Yep. You're a business. Like it's a marketing channel. It's not just your passion. It really has to work for you. And, nine times out of 10, if you don't plan what it working successfully looks like, you're not going to get there. So, we start with what is success going to look like and work towards that.
See, and I'm glad you said that because I say that, God, I mean, done over 200 episodes, probably at least half where I say, like, what does success mean to you? Mm-hmm. You know, because too many times we're looking at someone else's success. Like, if you look at Tony Robbins, right? Dude's a billionaire. You know, he's got 80, I think it's like 88 businesses or something.
Yeah.
That does not appeal to me one ounce. You know, not at all. Like, that doesn't do it for me. I'm a very small, I want to say small-minded, like, mentally, but in the grand scheme of things, like, mm-hmm. I don't want something that big. I just want something that gives me, like, time freedom, financial freedom, mm-hmm. you know, that I can do, go be a present for all of my kids' stuff,
yeah.
and just travel when I want to. It's like, that's all I want.
I love that. And I think that is a concept. I've been thinking about this a lot in the over the pandemic when you have so much time to think. And it's the yeah. concept of enough.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is not a popular enough concept in business, in life. What is enough? You know, and you know, my idea of success is very similar to yours. You know, I want enough money to pay my bills. I want enough time to do things I like and spend with my family. And I want mm-hmm. enough reputation that people will trust my word when I say yes. something. That's I can't imagine success better than that.
Yeah.
You know what? But it's what is enough? And you like people who don't have enough, you know, your Elon Musk, your Tony Robbins. What are you going to do with billions of dollars?
Yeah.
How can you wake up every day with billions of dollars and not just out be compulsively making the world a better place? What kind of person do you have to be to actually acquire $1 billion? I'm not convinced it's a great one. So.
That's so true. Yeah, and so I mean, people who work for a lot of but they're like, wow, like they're intense, like they're yeah. absolutely intense. And again, and it's no knock on them. Like if that drives you, by all means, you go sure. be you. But that just doesn't drive me. You know,
same. Like I didn't go to all the trouble of starting my own business so I could work evenings and weekends. Like bingo. I did.
Bingo. It's like when I got a couple business partners years ago. And, you know, we did some great things. We really did, you know, ended up taking it from my gym from just a hobby. You know, I started mm-hmm. at the tail end of the restaurant industry and then ended up pursuing it full force. You know, we were able to open up a beautiful facility, 5,000 yeah. square feet. People were coming in droves. You know, we really didn't have any competition in the area where I was.
Yep.
And it grew great. I had 7 employees. I had an assistant and I had them too. But like at the end of all of it, like I was making about the same I was making managing restaurants,
yeah.
you know, so it's like I have all these people, I'm doing all these evaluations, all these, and I love the people. Don't get me wrong. I love the people, but the back end stuff, I was like, this isn't fun. You know, it was nice having, you know, 30 people come in at 5 o'clock and another 30 people coming in at 6, then another 30 people coming in at 9 and then at night, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, just hundreds of people coming in per day. He said it was awesome, but again, at the end of the day, it's like I feel the same way I felt in a restaurant.
Yeah,
you know. So it's like in 2017, our lease was up where we were, and I'd made the tough decision to downsize.
Yeah,
you know, it was a really tough decision, but I'm far happier now. So like I'm still in the gym setting. I'm still helping people crush their goals, but it's not overwhelming now. You know, like you know, there was just so much weight on me, and it wasn't fun. And then the business partners, all they really cared about was making more money. I'm like, we have 200 and some odd people in here now. You know, you know what I mean? It's like, why can't we just pour into the people we have now? And then we just had differing of opinions, and then that whole thing went south, but that's another story. But so for me, like, I don't want 10 different businesses and 1,000 employees, and like, that doesn't do it for me. So yeah. hammering down what people's definition of success, I think, is key, because they might think that they want that until they actually get it.
Very, very much so. And I think a lot of people probably find themselves in that situation, and that is a really uncomfortable place to find yourself, because everything you've ever heard, everything everyone has ever taught you is that this is the thing that's going to be happy and make you successful.
Yeah.
And then you get there and no one's ever told you that you can be wrong about what you wanted.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you can work for something, you can, with the best of intentions, really put your heart and your soul into achieving something and get it and realize this sucks. it's true. In business and relationships and absolutely everything, you know, it's mm-hmm. you know, it doesn't, there's nothing wrong with you if what you thought you wanted didn't turn out to work.
Yes. Let me share quickly. So there's a woman, she used to train with me years ago. She mm-hmm. reached out to me because she knows I help people, you know, in come up with business ideas and all that good stuff. So she says to me, you know, I know you spent a lot of time in the restaurant industry, and it's always been a dream of mine to open my own kind of restaurant slash bar. I was like, all right. I said, so let's meet up on Zoom and we'll talk about it. So I'm picking her brain as like the why do you want to do this? Like, you know, what's your vision for it? And she's of African descent. And she's like, you know, where I live, there's nothing really embracing like the different African cultures. So I want to start a restaurant, have theme nights. Maybe one night be Ethiopian, one night be from Ghana, one night from Zambia and Zaire. And I was like, concept sounds nice. But then I was like, I
love that idea.
But then I was like, have you ever worked in a restaurant?
Mm.
No. Have you ever worked in a bar? She's like, no. I was like, okay, so you've never seen the inner workings of a restaurant. And she's like, no. I was like, okay. I said, now I'm just going to give you some brutal truths here. I was like, I am not trying to rain on your parade, but, and then I just went through the whole list. And so going back to what we both said about, it may not look the way you thought originally. And so I said, look, you are into fitness, all right? I said, so why don't you open up something like a fitness center and have you can still have it African themed, and mm-hmm. you can still have the different cultures, you know, like maybe on Tuesdays have people dressed up in Ethiopian colors, and then on Wednesdays you do South African colors, you know, or whatever, and you can play the different musics from the different countries. I said, and that way fitness is way less overhead, there's way less nonsense, mm-hmm. you'll need way less staff. I said, in order for you to open a restaurant, you're gonna need at least $1 million. At least, like, that's minimum. And her eyes get all big, you know. So, but just helping her walk through that. But I think mm-hmm. she liked the fitness aspect, you know. So going back to what I said earlier, what you really want, I'm like, you love fitness, you love the African culture, marry the two.
Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah. No, I like it. And figure out, I mean, what's the outcome you're working towards? You know, yeah. And work backwards from that. How do you get, you know, as much good outcome with as little personal trauma as you can.
Yeah, you know, she said she wanted the dancing and all that, and you still can, because like in mm-hmm. fitness, music is a huge component of it.
Oh yeah,
you know, and like I said, you can have the theme nights. I mean, I'm not really into the theme nights, but like I see other gyms, you know, they do 80s nights and they do Halloween parties and Christmas parties and all that stuff, and you know, it's part funny. Of the industry. So
yeah,
I'm like, and you're already within the industry. Like you've taught classes, you've been taking classes for, I think I met her like 10 years ago, I want to say.
Oh yeah.
I was like, so you're already there. So why try to educate yourself in something that you know nothing about when you can take something you already know about and just bring it to life?
Yeah. I like that. I mean, that's restaurants, because you hear that story all the time, right?
Well, people yeah.
are, like, you know, with mom's great cooking and dad's business sense, we'll have a successful restaurant.
Yes.
Everyone thinks they can do it because everyone has eaten at restaurants.
Yes.
Oh, how hard can it be just to make food and bring it out to people?
You'll like, be surprised.
Oh darling.
Like, bless
their little grease trap and then tell me how you feel.
Or the fans above the grill. Lord have mercy.
Work a closing shift with a third degree burn, then let's talk.
Yes. I've done it. I've burned my eyelid before.
Oof.
Working it in a breakfast place. Like mm. they had all stainless steel pans. And, you know, the pans, for my height, the pans were eye level.
Oh, yeah.
And I have depth perception issues because I'm farsighted. And I know mm-hmm. I should wear glasses, and I don't. But like, I leaned over to get something, and the thing went right on my eyelid on Mother's Day. The busiest breakfast day of the year. And I had to work the rest of that shift with my eyes throbbing. Oh, it was awful. But anyways, so, all right, so back to you and your business. So, how did you come up with what you're doing now? Because I'm sure when you started it, mm-hmm. it evolved a little. Just like when I started my gym, it evolved to where we are now. So how many times did you have to tweak or pivot or switch things up?
I think it was, you know, after kind of that initial hard pivot from video to audio, it was much more a process of refinements yeah. over time, and very much data driven. More than anything else, you know, beyond, does this feel good? Do we like it? Can we do what we say we're going to do?
Yes.
But it's just like, okay, no, this is what is the most profitable, you know, of the things that we do and we enjoy. This is what has the best value to the people that we're doing it for. This is what we can do with, you know, this is what our team likes doing the most. This is what we have the best skills to provide. And it's like, oh, and several, goodness, we're undercharging, aren't we? moments.
We've all done that.
We've all been there. but you know, I mean, we don't charge. We're not the most expensive podcast producers in the industry. Coming back to that concept of enough, I want things to, you know, cost enough that people value them when we do them, and I want to be able to pay everyone who works on it comfortably enough so that they don't have to worry. But don't need much more than that. Doesn't have to be more than that. So that's we're kind of comfortably mid-range, I think, in that regard, which feels really good. So it's a nice spot to be. And now we're kind of getting to a point where we've got great systems and we've got a wonderful team in place that handles most of the day-to-day. For me, getting out of the day-to-day, I'll tell you a funny story. I think you'll like this. I hired a brilliant admin who's wonderful. And then I micromanaged. And I was getting in the way of the process and I was confusing things. And then one day she very kindly, in extremely polite language, told me to back the F off and let her do the job. And I said, you're absolutely right. Let me do that immediately. And since then, we've had no problems whatsoever.
I love it.
And I'm so grateful that she felt comfortable saying that to me. Oh, she was absolutely right. I was just muddying the waters by being involved in that stuff. So we figured out all I need to know is a daily, here's what's going right, here's what's going wrong. So she sends me that every morning, and I don't think about it otherwise.
See, and it's nice when you have that person, because let me tell you, like, and I'm not saying this in like a, I'm a tough guy kind of way. Mm-hmm. I've clashed with every single supervisor I've ever had. Every single one. Because my thing is, give me the task, I will execute the task.
Yeah.
Like, it's that simple. While I'm executing the task, don't bother me.
Yeah.
You know, like, unless I'm screwing something up, you know, by all means, I can take corrective action. That's not a problem. But it's like, it's just that unnecessary micromanaging.
Yeah.
Huge pet peeve of mine. Huge, huge, huge.
Oh, yeah, it drives me bananas too. And so I was quite embarrassed to realize that is what I had been doing.
That's what you were doing.
Because I hadn't done it intentionally. I very much believe in the theory of no, hire smart people, let them do their jobs. But here I was kind of worried about the day to day, making like, and all I was doing was causing trouble. And so that was it was a nice humbling moment to be like, nope, the smart thing I did was hire the smart person. I don't need to do anymore.
See, then I had one the opposite, where it's like she was looking for that. Because my thing is, if I hire you, this is what I want. Go do it.
Yeah.
You know, then if you do something that maybe I want to tweak, I'll let you know and we'll tweak it. But it's all right. So how do you want this to look? And how do you want this? And how do you want that? And I'm like, if I was going to do all that, I wouldn't need you.
So, you know what? I'm going to take a wild bet and say that that person worked for a hard to please narcissist before they worked for you. And they'd be told to, you know, make decisions, you're empowered, and then everything they do would be wrong. And they'd be penalized for doing it. I bet that's the situation they came from.
Probably. All right, so my sister, I put it up already, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Like, marketing is an art, in my opinion, and digital marketing even more so. So before you go, I just want to give my two cents.
Yeah.
Because, like what I've learned is most people try to market their product instead of marketing the solution. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, take the scrub daddy, you know, the scrub pad with the smiley face on it. And so watching those commercials, you know, they're talking about how it solves the problem that the traditional sponges don't solve. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'll get into that. But I feel like even with trainers, like, you go to some trainers' websites and it's all about them and their degrees and they're this and they're that. And it's like, and if I'm Jane out of shape woman and I just ate a bag of chips and I'm feeling bad about myself and I go on the internet and I do what's like, I don't want to read all about you. You know, it's like, I want to read about something that addresses my problem. You know, so what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with it. Like, You want to talk about how you're addressing problems. I think there's not enough straight facts in marketing. I understand why people tell their personal stories and their rags to riches tale and their hero's journey that you hear in every freaking webinar you attend. Like, I get why it's done. And I find it absolutely infuriating. I don't want to hear the commercialization of your personal pain. I'm not interested. I don't like that you're trying to make money from that. As a human, I'm glad that you're thriving now and that you've, you know, person to person, like I'm always interested to hear someone's story and get to know them. In a sales perspective, just tell me what you're going to do. Tell me how you're going to do it and tell me what it's going to cost me.
Yeah.
I know what I need. True. Give me the information to make that decision.
Agreed.
So I think, people do it because it works. So that's where I'd kind of come up against. I mean, people wouldn't be doing it if it didn't work. But I still find it really frustrating and I won't do it personally, which has probably cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years.
See, and you know what? I agree 1,000% with that because I'm very stern in my consultation process in the gym. Mm-hmm. And I know the last challenge I did, 11 people joined. I have one remaining. I have one. Like the other 10 could not hang.
Yeah.
But I set very, very clear expectations. Very clear. And it's like, if you can't live up to this, do not join. And same thing, like my former business coach is like, Robert, you're costing yourself so much money. I said, no, I'm costing myself headaches of dealing with the people who aren't ready to commit. You know, because like I'm the type, I'm an athlete. No, mm-hmm. I got out of shape one time, but I felt being an athlete before. Yeah. So it was easy for me. I mean, it wasn't easy. It was hard work, but it was easy for me to focus on what I wanted because I felt it already. You know, so working with people who may have been sedentary their entire lives, I always say it's easier to drag badass out of someone than to try to stuff it in.
Yeah.
You know, so someone who was a former athlete or former runner or whatever it was, maybe they let themselves go. I can help them tap back into that person.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who's never had it, it's like, I'm not the right person for you.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like me being snotty. I don't want to work with that person. It's like, no, it's like you're better off with someone who took a similar journey and then found fitness. It's like mm-hmm. you need that person.
Yeah. Or even someone who, you know, their deep passion is helping someone go from, you know, 0 to 40. Rather than from 50 to 100. I think it is so much about just be really clear about, like, I think the underpinning of everything is just be the person who does what they say they're going to do.
Yeah.
You know, be that person as a marketer, be it as a business owner, be it as a customer, just, you know, and if you were talking about, you know, that having drive would save the world, you know, just doing what you say you're going to do would do a lot to, oh, pardon, make the world a better place too.
Yeah, true. See, I want to address on this here too. So it says I save my me story for the training class, but now nobody has just one me story because now again, I'll speak for fitness, you know, for fitness, because I've had 7 surgeries. So one of the biggest things when people come into fitness, like, oh, well, I had shoulder surgery, so I'm not going to be able to XYZ. And then I'll say, well, I also had shoulder surgery in 2015, and these were the steps I took. And, you know, so like if you can connect with them on that level, you don't want to just say, hi, I'm Rob Foster, and I have these certifications. I've been training for this long, and I've trained thousands of people. No one cares about that, you know. But if they bring up something that you have something similar, now they're like, oh, you know my pain.
Yeah.
You know, see, then that's completely different. Like when I was going to buy my car, and, you know, they say, don't trust the used car salespeople, but. But it's like, I told him up front, I was like, don't hustle me. I was like, don't hustle me. I was like, this is what I'm looking for. And he brought me to the first car he showed me was a car I ended up buying. But he ended up showing me a couple other ones. And he's like, this one right here looks like you. I'm like, but I want that Mazda.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but you know, you said you had X amount. I said, stop right there. I want the Mazda. I was like, you keep talking, you might miss mine and lose the sale. I said, so let's go back to the Mazda and let me know how I can get that one.
Oh, man. Why do some people make it so hard to spend money?
Yes.
Like, I get this. I live in Quebec, right? And I don't know if you've ever heard about the labyrinthine, maybe even Kafkaesque bureaucracy that involves every element of living in Quebec. It's
I haven't heard that.
What did my friend in Moscow say? It makes the Soviets look like amateurs.
Wow. Okay.
And it comes up every year for me when I try to pay my taxes, right? Like, I want to pay my taxes like a good citizen. Why is it so hard? Why does it take me 2 weeks and 3 phone calls?
For real.
Just let me send you the money.
Yes. I know, it's so true. Like, When you call back, press 1, and now press 2. Now enter your account number. Now enter this. Now enter that. And then somebody finally comes to the phone. What's the first thing that they say? Can I have your account number?
Okay, all of that, but first you have to listen to it in French before hearing for service in English, press 9.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, it's so true. Oh, God. So what's next for you?
What's next? Well, this is just this week, actually, we published the very first episode, the teaser episode of our very first podcast at One Stone Creative. So after years of behind the scenes work, we are finally doing our own show because we can't put it off any longer.
Awesome. Love it.
I'm a behind the scenes person by nature. So going out and being the host is not like filling me with joy and rainbows and puppies.
And I'm the opposite. I thrive on that.
Yeah. I can do it. Like I'm not a shy person, but being in the spotlight brings me no joy. So I don't pursue those opportunities very often. But you know, it's time. We need to have one to kind of show the different things we can do and network. So I am quite excited about it. It's called the Business Podcast Blueprint. And so that's kind of the next thing we're doing. Hopefully, in a couple of months, we're going to have a membership community that goes alongside of it to provide for company podcasters or people podcasting for their businesses, the kind of support and you know, direct one-to-one insight that can make a really big difference in how you do things. So it's like, you know, should I be making my episodes 30 minutes or an hour long? Well, that's the kind of question we're going to be able to address sort of in the new group that we're coming up with and giving that on-demand type of answer. So I'm super excited about that and very hopeful.
Love it. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm going to be doing something similar too. What platform are you going to be using for your private community?
Slack.
I don't know if I've heard of Slack.
It's my favorite of the community platforms. It's designed kind of as a professional communicator. It's usually used, I think, as an internal tool. Yeah. But I really like the way it has, of any of the kind of online collaboration tools I've tried, it has the fastest uptake amongst users that I have personally seen. I don't know if it's, you know, that's an objective truth or not, but I've seen it very effective. It's like, Mini Tesla. Someone said it's like Discord for old people.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm looking into locals for mine. Cause, you know, like I help people with the storytelling. Like I help with brand stories as well. But I'm finding now, like, there's so many people that just bury past experiences. And so, like, I was working with a few women, and I told this a few times on the show, so I'm not going to go all the way through. But just as I'm going through helping this woman with her pitch, it took round 3 before she said she was a stroke survivor at the age of 36. And I was like, why did it take 20 minutes for that to surface? You know, so it's like, settle down, Monique. She said you just made them feel young for not having Slack. but I was like, you started a holistic healing business, you know, and what, based on what you did to help you reverse the effects of having the stroke, it's like,
really
cool. That's got to be part of your story.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why is that not involved in it? So from, honestly, all this derived from starting the podcast. It's like, when I started it, I really had no direction for it. Like, I really wasn't looking to monetize it. You know, like, I'm not looking to be like Joe Rogan getting paid $30 million, you know, to talk to people. But I was looking at more so to just talk to people and learn from them. Yeah. Like this is my third notebook that I'm on, because everyone who comes on, I take notes and I just listen to what they say. And then, like, as I'm working with people in their story creations, like, I take other people's stories and help other people formulate theirs.
Yeah, cool.
Know what I mean? So it's like, that's what I do with mine, because people message me all the time and say, how do you monetize your podcast? Like, I don't really monetize the podcast. I said, but it opens up opportunities for other things. Like, a couple of us are collaborating on doing a virtual event on various topics. Other ones, they have radio shows, and they have me as guest on their shows. And so, like, it opens up other doors, you know. So, and so with the private community, is I want to get people in, and it doesn't cost a lot to join. It's like $4 a month, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But people get to
accessible.
Come in and learn the power of telling their stories. You know, and again, and not the giving the resume, you know, like, I don't care about your resume. I'm like, yeah, who are you at your core? And then tell the story of how you became that person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's where other people relate to your stories. So like, if you just say, yeah, I have a $1 million business. I have a big house on the beach and I drive a Lamborghini. No one's going to care about that. But if you say, I grew up like this, you know, I had parents who told me this, or I had a brother who used to belittle me and call me names. And then you were able to pivot that mindset, create something amazing. And then this is the steps I took to do it. Now they're like, I can follow that. You know, so that's very the beauty. Cool. That's the beauty in the storytelling.
That sounds like it's going to be a really exciting project.
It is. It is. I have my website's under construction. I'm finally getting a big boy website made, not the $40 Fiverr person in Bangladesh making it. I actually hired an actual firm and getting whatever it's called. But
that's exciting.
You know, going all in with it. So it's just a matter of getting people to realize, hey, carries on. You know, getting people to realize what their superpower actually is, and going back to what we said an hour ago, it's already in there.
It very much is.
You know, it's already in there. All right, so give us some final thoughts.
Let's see, some final thoughts. Maybe we'll go back to thinking outside the box. And I think, especially, you know, as someone who is looking to build a business or get into the entrepreneurs, there's a couple things to remember. One, it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
You know, just be willing to go out, figure out what you can do, offer it to 100 people, and you're going to have a lot more data at the end of that process than you did at the beginning. You can hopefully a little more money too. Yeah. And the other thing is, just because something has been done a certain way doesn't mean it's the only way or the best way for it to be done. Any path that you can imagine from point A to point B is worth giving a shot. You know, which isn't to say you shouldn't look at, you know, examples of things that have gone well or gone poorly in the past. But I mean, at this point, especially when you're just getting started, all you've got to lose is your own time. Just test things out. what are you here for but to learn anyway?
Yes.
And I think, you know, approaching things with that attitude of, okay, well, let's just do this and see what happens. You know, from a business creation standpoint, I think that's the best part about it is no one can tell you, no, we don't do things that way.
Yes.
Because no, I'm the boss. I do things that way. I'm going to try doing things that way. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I'm going to try doing things that way. That's a huge freedom, a really exciting thing to be able to do. That's one of my favorite parts about this. I like being able to say, like, okay, I work with contractors all around the world. I still give them PTO because I can.
Yeah.
And why not? I'm going to do it that way.
Yes.
I'm the boss.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love it too. And, you know, like my sister put up there, you must be willing to learn.
Yeah.
And you must not be afraid to fail. You know, it's like, well, we got to repair that relationship with failure.
Oh, yeah.
Because I say there are things that I kick ass at. There are things I do not kick ass at. Mm-hmm. But you learn from both. So like the things that work, like, okay, I'm going to keep doing these. The things that don't work, okay, I'm going to find a better way to do these.
Yeah, and you can do things just because you enjoy them. Like I do ceramics as a hobby, and I have a distinct and notable lack of talent. I'm terrible. I'm really not that good at it at all, but I really enjoy it.
That's awesome.
You know, because it's a skill, I get to keep getting a tiny little bit better every time. It keeps me in the mindset of learning and of practicing and just being really comfortable with the fact that this is probably going to explode in the kiln. Don't get attached. You're not going to be able to drink coffee out of this.
Yep.
But I feel like it's one of the best things I do is because it is such consistent and regular feedback. Awesome. That you suck, which keeps you humble and keeps your ego real low.
See, and I love the fact that you keep trying it, though. Trying. Just like in the gym today, one of the newer women, she was trying to climb the rope. And I was like, all right, listen, today's goal is not for you to climb the rope. It's almost 20 feet high. I said, your goal is to learn the lock-in. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if you get on, you don't say, I can't climb the rope. You say, I just learned to lock in. That's what we do. Then eventually you'll be able to shimmy up 1 foot. And then what? You shimmy that 1 foot and then come back down. That's not a failure. That's a score. You learn now to lock in and shimmy a foot. It's like, it's a process. You know, it's a process. So like, there is no failure. You have things you can do and things you're working on doing. So it's like, all right, you try it this way and you tweak it back. Okay. So once you heal, it's not that we're never going to do it again. We're going to try a different way.
Oh, all right. I had a back injury a couple of years ago, shoveling snow. great times. And I was unable to bend forward very far. I couldn't maybe even get 30 degrees forward.
Yeah.
And the most irritating thing in the world has been what has fixed it. It's just constant diligence and dedication with stretching every single freaking night before bed.
Yep.
And, you know, it, there was no pill. There was no one magic move. It was just doing the darn thing every single night without fail.
Yes.
And that works for everything. It's, I hate having to give people that news. Like, with, like, you know, it's going to take you forever to get more downloads. You're just going to have to do it really slowly and keep doing it consistently over time. And that is literally the only thing that will work.
Yeah. Like if you look at any fitness commercial, it's always like 30 pounds in 30 days or 20 pounds in 20 days. I commit and I let people know you got to commit for a year.
Yeah.
You got to commit for a year. It's like, regardless of what you see on television, it's not going to happen. Yeah, I can tell you, eat 800 calories a day and you'll shrink in 30 days. You will. Guess what's going to happen on day 31? You're going to binge and you're going to gain it all back. Like, mm-hmm. It's not sustainable. But if you commit to the process, like, here is the process. I'm handing it to you on this piece of paper. This is what works.
Yeah.
But the question is, can you do it?
Yeah, and I mean, it creeps up slowly over time, the success, right? Because I didn't notice when it happened, but, you know, 18 months after I started diligently stretching around it, I can put both hands on the floor when I bend forward. Mm-hmm. How cool is that?
Exactly. It's over time, just like you were saying with the downloads.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if you want to increase your downloads, you have to keep being on camera. You have to keep, and you said the key word earlier about repurposing content. So, you know, like here, you know, I go live on YouTube and on my two Facebook pages, and then I'll find a powerful clip somewhere in here, and I'll put a 5-minute clip on Instagram, and then I'll put a shorter clip on LinkedIn, you know, looping back to the, whether it's Apple or Spotify or whatever. But it's, and then you can transcribe it and turn it into a blog post. Like, there's so many different things you can
take it to next steps. And this is one of the reasons I really love, especially audio podcasts, is because they're hyper repurposable. And you know, we make the distinction at once in between repurposing and reusing.
Yeah.
So, you know, putting things in different places, that's reusing, very valuable. Repurposing, you know, so maybe you've made several really good points during our conversation. Yeah. Maybe you put those into a library and send those to people before they get on a sales call with you. Here are the question. Here are my best insights, just so you know what I'm going to be telling you about. People start to feel like they know you before you get on that sales call. That sales conversation is easier. So I've got clients and they have, you know, buy downloads, tiny little shows, but I've used them to generate tens of thousands of dollars of new business in a matter of months, just because they're really cleverly adding this to, you know, their sales funnels and to their nurturing operations. And it's, you can tell I get excited about this.
That's good. Passion showing.
I think, and that's what, it's the strategy of it I love more than the most. I mean, podcasting in and of itself, I could be anything. I could be selling hoses if I got to think about the strategy of how that would work in someone's business.
True. Oh my God. Just look at the things being sold just at Walmart. Like somebody thought of that. It's like, wow, you know, you'll be surprised. You'll be surprised what's needed out there. Like when my father passed in 2019, we were doing like I said earlier, he was an engineer. So he was such a pack rat.
Yeah.
Like his garage was just a nightmare. But he could tell you where everything was in that baby.
Oh, right? Yeah.
But so anyways, as we're cleaning up, you know, my mother's making a junk pile. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why is this in the junk pile? It was like these two just steel beams. So to her, that was just trash. And I was like, no. I was like, I guarantee you someone will pay for that. You know, like, it's like, I definitely am not handy the way my dad was, but in watching him, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And so I told him, I was like, put that on the marketplace. And it was either a day or two later, somebody drove from 75 minutes away to get those rusty metal beams. And I don't remember exactly how much they paid for, but I was like, you know, it was right around $100. And I was like, and you were about to throw that out. And there was so many other things. Again, no one's going to pay for that. I'm like, never assume what someone may need.
You never even assume what you'll need yourself. We've got, I'm not like super minimalist or anything, but about, you know, once every year or two, I get this overwhelming compulsion to just discard everything that I own. Clean it out, get rid of it.
Yeah.
I get that from my mother. But my partner does not have such an instinct.
Yeah.
And every now and then, because they believe in like living in a clean, tidy, you know, home that we can use and enjoy. But every now and then they'll need to go to fix something in the house, and they'll find that one screw in the hoard of screws that hasn't been touched for years, and they're just like, Megan, we can't throw out anything ever again. Something random came in useful again.
Yeah.
We have to keep it all.
That's awesome. Yeah, but that's pretty much how he was too. Like he would get rid of anything. He's just like, you never know when you'll need it.
And okay. Damnably, sometimes they do come in really handy.
Yeah. And you find out you need it once you throw it out.
Always. Absolutely. Consistently. Always. Yeah.
Yeah, but I had something. I don't remember what it was, but it was in my basement for years. Mm-hmm. Years. I found it. I sold it on Marketplace. And it was like 3 or 4 days later. I was like, damn, I wish I had that. It's like, hadn't thought about it in years until you get rid of it. And the universe is like, bingo, here we go.
That's it's like when you can't find something and you're just like, well, I know I put it somewhere extremely sensible.
Yes. You put it somewhere where I don't lose it. Yeah. And then you lose it anyway. All right, so let people know how to get in touch with you, where they can find you, your social channels, all that good stuff.
Definitely. Well, you'll find us mainly at onestonecreative.net. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, the best way is email. So it's megan@onestonecreative.net. M-E-G-A-N, one is O-N-E. I answer emails really quickly. And I have really great intentions regarding social media that are not associated with a great deal of follow through at the moment. So.
That's awesome.
I am intending to get better at. That is correct.
Okay.
Yeah, onestonecreative.net. And there you'll find some cool stuff, some interesting articles, some great how-tos, and our very exciting State of Business Podcasting report, which we released for the second year in a row in December, all about what the top 100 business podcasts are doing.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, this was good stuff.
This was lovely.
Yes, I want to talk to you backstage once we're off air. I love the backstage, like we're live. Right?
Very cool, yeah.
but thank you for taking the time to come out and share your expertise. It was a fun conversation.
It was.
And I do panels, so I'll most likely invite you back to be on one of the panels.
That sounds great.
It's like an idea of what they look like. We've done 5 of them so far, and all 5 have really rocked. So,
oh, awesome.
I think just with our personalities and stuff that you'll definitely add some value to the next. I think I have the next one filled up already, but maybe before March.
You schedule things out to a really impressive level.
Well, let me tell you, like, this happened totally by accident. So when I think my first 8 to 10 episodes, I don't remember the exact number, it was just me talking about fitness stuff, because I didn't really know what direction I wanted this to go. And this goes back to, like, you just need one post. So I joined this group called the Virtual Stage Challenge, and the admin said, if you guys want to promote anything, promote it, because, you know, with a lot of these groups, the admins don't let you post links or anything. So I posted one link. I had a generic flyer that I made myself on Calendly. Like, I'm not artistic. Not Calendly, Canva.
Yeah.
And it was enough to get the point across, but it was like, I look back at it now and it's hideous. But I had that, and I was only doing one show a week at that point. Mm-hmm. And from that one post, I booked 4 months out. So I was like, holy crap. And really so cool. I added a second one. I just posted in the group that I added a second one and booked another four weeks out. Four months out. And so then I joined this one called National Publicity Summit. Mm-hmm. And they had 65 people on there, I want to say. And mine's about storytelling. So everybody has a story. So, like, unless your business is really, really hideous, I let people on. I mean, I've had former pimps on, former gang members. I had a Playboy centerfold, or whatever you call it. You can tell I don't read it because I don't know what it's called. But
model.
But like, I've had people from all walks of life because the journeys are amazing. So anyway, it was 65 people. I invited all 65, and 60 booked. So that's why I'm booking so far out.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't really do anything major. Like, when people ask me, how are you booking out so far? Like, everybody has a story. So it's like, I don't want to turn anyone away because they may have a really unique story.
What a great attitude to approach this with. I absolutely love that. I think that's so, you know, I mean, working, you know, podcasts, you know, built for business development. Yeah, it's a lot more strategic, even to the point of being a little, by necessity, mercenary. Yeah. But I love that idea of, let's talk to everyone and hear their story. I think that's
phenomenal. Like, when I came across the Playboy model, and I was like, do I want to go down that route? And then I read a little bit into her backstory, and there was a story there. So I was like, you know what? I kind of want to hear the rest of the story.
Totally.
You know, because like now she's like one of the top 1% in her industry. She does some type of marketing. I don't remember exactly what, because that was a lot of shows ago. But like she used that as a tool to elevate herself to the next level, you know? So like, right. I wanted to get the ins and outs of how she pulled that off. So, and then the guy who was the former pimp, that was a hell of an episode.
Because
he did not hold back, but he actually used his experiences as a pimp to become a successful businessman now. So your face. So like when I was reading it, that was me at first. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, because I'm super pro sex worker, but I don't know necessarily how I feel about people who profit off the labor of sex workers.
Well, agree.
I'll have to listen to the episode and find out.
Yeah, it was definitely an eye-opening episode, but just like the way he was talking, he's like, you know, I wasn't proud of it. He's like, but it was bringing in the money. He's like, you know, the girls were making money, and just it really was a interesting episode.
I'm gonna look it up and listen to it. Yeah, that sounds really fascinating. Yes.
Yeah, so like, had I turned him away, I would have never really got that insight, because I only know what they show you on movies and stuff. So to actually get a real life encounter of someone that's been down that road, it was pretty interesting. So
cool.
All righty, so I'm gonna break this down. Like I said, don't sign out though, because I want to go over a couple of things with you, and then we'll go from there.
Sounds good.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye. All right, so that was Megan. If you tuned in late, make sure you go back and Kelsey, what's up, kid? Make sure you listen to the rest of the episode. We covered a whole lot of topics, and her personality is fantastic. So this is just a really good listen to. And I will be back tomorrow. I know I usually don't do Saturdays. I'll be back tomorrow with a guest I had a few weeks ago. We had such a great conversation, and we left so much on the table that I'm bringing her back again tomorrow so we can continue the conversation. That's Trish, and then I'll be back again on Sunday as well. So Sundays are back on the schedule because I screwed up, and I thought I took it off for all of 2021, but apparently I didn't continue it for 2022, so Sundays are booked out till May right now, so I'm going to keep Sundays going, right? So I'm not going to turn all those people away. So that's all I got for you for today. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com. Till next time, shut up.